You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Coming up tonight at 7, it's Upbeat Storytelling with Snap Judgment. Tonight's theme, Down with the Ship. There are two kinds of people, those who try to survive and those who dance as the water rises. That's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
Now, there have been a lot of big changes in the world over the last decade or so, from the Great Recession in the U.S. in 2008 to the rise of ISIS in 2014 to the referendum earlier this year that led to the United Kingdom leaving or on the way to leave the European Union.
Our next guest argues that it's no accident that large-scale change is happening in this modern period. He outlines why these mega changes are happening now and looks at what might be coming in the future.
Daryl West is with us. He's Vice President and Director of Governance Studies for the Brookings Institution. He's the author of the new book, Mega Change, Economic Disruption, Political Upheaval, and Social Strife in the 21st Century. Daryl, welcome back to Central Time.
Rob, nice to be with you.
We'll get into some more specific examples, Daryl, but spell out the concept. What do we mean by mega change?
Well, as you pointed out in the introduction, when you look around the world and when you look in American politics, there are large-scale transformations taking place. Part of it is due to economic changes. There are social tensions that are coming to the forefront, and we're also seeing governance failures that are contributing to this. So when you look just at the last few years, we've seen the emergence of Donald Trump, which surprised all the experts, the emergence of ISIS, which was a big shock, the Brexit vote, which you mentioned, and then threats to globalization. And so I argue all these things are connected, and we actually are living in a quite dangerous time due to the large-scale changes taking place.
Yeah, why are all these things happening at once? What's underlying this unpredictability when it comes to these big changes?
I mean, part of it is economic, but part of it is also political. Economically, we are moving from this industrial era to a new digital economy, and there's a lot of dislocations and disruptions that are taking place as a result of that. Change makes people really nervous. If they're not personally affected, they worry about their family members. If they're parents with children, they worry about what economic future those kids will have. But at the same time that there's all this public anger and anxiety about these types of changes, our political system seems very poorly equipped to actually deal with this. We're plagued by hyper-partisanship, by extreme polarization, and so the combination of nervousness produced by these economic changes and the weakness of our political system in addressing the impact of those changes creates a very bad combination.
Well, as you say that, I think about a historical precedent, and maybe this is worrying. I think about the Industrial Revolution era leading up into, you know, the World War I era, where you saw four major empires collapse, the beginning of the end of colonialism, the lead up to the rise of communism, the run up to World War II. Was that maybe a last big era of mega change, and are there lessons we can learn from that?
You're exactly right. I mean, that was early in the 20th century. There were a lot of things going on there. You had the change from an agrarian economy to the industrial era. People were being uprooted. You know, people were leaving the farms and moving to the cities. There were lots of problems in government at that time. Corruption and cronyism were quite common. And so when you see a combination of big economic and political problems coming together, people get very dissatisfied in that type of situation, and sometimes bad things happen. You know, wars happen, violence happens, there's a lot of public unrest, and so I'm not necessarily predicting that will be the outcome in the next few years, but it's something we need to worry about because historically that was what happened in the early 20th century.
Right. Well, we can look at bad news. Syria, obviously, some other places that are currently war zones, Russian expansion, the Crimea. On the other hand, there's a lot of good news. People pointing out, like, for the first time, and I don't know how long, there's no active war in the Western Hemisphere right now. Is it possible to navigate an era of mega change without disaster, without things really going south?
There certainly are good mega changes that are taking place. People are living longer. There are infectious diseases around the world that are getting eradicated. More people globally are being lifted out of poverty. That's certainly true both in India and China. But the problem is that when there's a lot of nervousness among the public, when there are large-scale changes taking place, and our government is not doing a very good job dealing with them, that's the combination that we should worry about. We certainly have the capacity to address these problems. In the early 20th century, we did it. In the aftermath of World War II, when the world was kind of in shambles and major parts of the world, their economies were completely ruined, we did a Marshall Plan, got things back together. We created new governing institutions to help countries around the world that were experiencing problems. So it's certainly within our scope to address these issues, but the question is whether we have the capacity and the will to do so.
Talking to Darrell West, his new book is called Mega Change. Darrell, I want to delve in a little more. You've mentioned globalization some, and it seems like there's so many double-edged swords. International trade can increase economic output, increase prosperity, but it dislocates people. A lot of people lose jobs. The internet was going to bring us together. We were going to meet people around the world. Yay, that happened some, but also it led for new ways for us to argue with each other and to recruit for a terrorist organization. It's unpredictable. There's a lot of unintended consequence that seems to be at the heart of this unpredictability.
Absolutely, and that's a big part of the problem. On globalization, I mean, that has been the dominant regime for the last several decades. And at the beginning, the promise was that everybody would be a winner, that a lot of countries would end up doing much better. But, of course, now several decades later, there are major criticisms of that. People don't think they're doing so well. Workers here have lost jobs. Our manufacturing capacity has gone abroad. But even in some of those countries in Asia, those people feel like they're being ripped off by globalization, that they're not doing so well. And so we're kind of at a turning point now where, you know, if you add the Trump voters and the Sanders voters together, they're probably a majority of the electorate. And a lot of the discontent, even though it's coming both from the left and the right, was due to these economic changes, people's concerns about globalization and fair trade, and, you know, is America doing well today? So we're kind of in this transition period where the old regime is starting to fall apart, and we're not quite sure what that new regime is going to look like.
What's a leader to do in a situation like that? What is a responsible way to try to provide leadership given that uncertainty?
Well, the uncertainty is being generated by a lot of the underlying economic changes. And so when you look back to the early 20th century when we were experiencing the same types of changes, leaders came along and basically tried to develop policies and programs that would address that anxiety. We had new social programs. We had new types of worker retraining programs that were put in place. So these are the types of things that leaders need to be working on. We need infrastructure investment so that we can kind of build the basis of long-term economic prosperity. So there are very specific and concrete things that we can do. But again, the question is, are we going to do them?
And people have pointed toward a rise in what used to be called strongman politics. You can point toward examples of a strong, charismatic leader rising in, depending on who you want to lump in, Russia, Turkey, the Philippines. Some people have included Donald Trump as a prospective member of that group. Is that likely to be a common response to that uncertainty?
It has been a common response so far, because when you have a lot of changes taking place simultaneously and there's a lot of chaos and disorder and there's unpredictability and people really aren't so sure about how well the future is going to work out, in that type of situation, that is a perfect recipe for these strong people to come along and basically say, what we need is leadership, even if it tends to be authoritarian leadership, in order to restore order out of that kind of chaos. So clearly in the 1930s, that was a common response in many countries to the economic changes of that time. In the current period, you know, we're seeing Putin in Russia, a strong leader emerge in China, Trump here in the United States, some right-wing leaders coming to the forefront in various European countries. So we are seeing certain parallels in this chaotic time period of strong leaders coming to the forefront.
We're talking to Darrell West from the Brookings Institution. He's author of the new book, Mega Change: Economic Disruption, Political Upheaval, and Social Strife in the 21st Century.
And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What's one mega change that's happened in your lifetime that you didn't see coming? And why do you think there have been so many mega changes in recent years? What patterns do you see in these big changes? Call in now at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up the conversation with Daryl West. Maybe hear from you coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're picking up our discussion now with Daryl West. He's author of Mega Change, Economic Disruption, Political Upheaval, and Social Strife in the 21st Century.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like the world is changing faster now than it did in previous generations? What is a huge change that happened in your lifetime that you didn't expect? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Daryl, on that question, I'll say, I, like a lot of people, grew up in a world where there was a Cold War. There was a Soviet Union. There was a communist bloc. And as far as any of us, most of us thought that was going to be how it was for the rest of our lives. It isn't. You say in your book you're trying to shake up that kind of what you call presentist thinking. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, a lot of people are trapped in the present in the sense that we think whatever is happening now is going to keep happening in the future. And of course, in this time period, we've just seen so many different examples of things that we thought always were going to be that way that turned out not to be the case. So you mentioned the collapse of communism, the fall of the Berlin Wall. We had the example 10 years ago of the Great Recession. We've seen the rise of ISIS, and then in domestic politics, the surprising rise of Donald Trump. And so all these things are catching people off guard. So I argue in the book that our civic memories often go back 20 or 25 years. It's kind of, we remember what happened during our adult lives. But a lot of the things that are happening now, because the forces that used to constrain change have grown very weak, are really extraordinary. And you almost have to go back 100 years, 200 years, or sometimes even 500 years to really be able to put this in context and come up with a parallel for that. So I argue that we really need to study history, that just relying on the post-World War II period is not going to be sufficient, because that was an unusual time period that now seems to be breaking down, and we seem to be rediscovering some of these historic forces of authoritarianism and extremism that long have been part of our human history.
One thing I kept thinking as I was reading your book is, okay, these changes, we've been bad at predicting them. Maybe that's because they're more or less unpredictable. So we don't know what's coming next. It seems like the one thing that could help in any state of change is resilience. Is there some way we can be cultivating that as countries, as societies, as leaders that can help us deal with mega changes?
I think you're exactly right. Resilience is a great quality in this particular time period. And people need to alter their expectations of change, because a lot of people have grown up in an era that featured small-scale incremental changes. And so we tended to think that was the norm and that was going to continue in the future. And now when we see these tidal waves of change, these tsunamis, these large-scale forces that quickly emerge and often have radical changes that take place, we're caught off guard. So part of the resilience is adjusting our expectations to understand that it's no accident that we're seeing these large-scale changes. The things that used to constrain them are quite weak, and so we're likely to continue seeing them.
Let's bring in our callers now. We've got Ben on the line starting us off in Madison. Hi, Ben.
Hi, folks. How are you? So I wanted to make a comment about shifting job changes and job demand. So, for example, we have coal mining. It's a dirty, dangerous job, but a lot of people put food on the table with it. It's also terrible for the environment and less efficient as we find other sources of fuel, preferably not fossil fuel. Those folks who have been coal mining all their lives and grew up in these communities are very upset that the jobs are going away, rightly so. And I'm wondering what governments can do, what society can do to kind of reframe the issue, saying not, screw you guys, your jobs are going away, coal is dirty, but to say, we appreciate you've been working hard supporting the country, but we need to shift things in this direction. And I'm wondering if your guests can talk about perhaps what other countries, maybe the Scandinavian countries, have done to retrain people and shift them into a place where they can still be useful and helpful to society, support their families, but also to get them out of places where there's kind of a, to society, there's a net negative.
Got it, Ben. I want to bring Daryl in on that. So when mega changes put coal miners or many other lines of work out of work, Daryl, how can societies deal with that?
Well, Ben is exactly right in how he framed that question. During any period of economic transformation, there are going to be winners and losers, and there are going to be people who are caught up in those transitions, and they're going to lose their jobs. And so as a society, we can't just throw them away. These are often adults who trained for certain occupations, and in some cases, those jobs simply are going to be gone forever. And as he pointed out, a lot of countries abroad do much more in terms of workforce development and worker retraining to ease those types of transitions, that we need to focus on giving them new skills, helping them to learn computer skills, technological skills, skills that are going to be very much in demand in coming decades. And frankly, the United States does not do a very good job of that. Ironically, we actually spend quite a bit of money on it, but we're not getting good results. So we really need to study those worker retraining programs so that we can get much better results.
Ben, thanks for that call. We're talking to Daryl West. His new book is Mega Change, Economic Disruption, Political Upheaval, and Social Strife in the 21st Century. Back to your calls. Jim is with us in Madison. Jim, hi.
Hello there. Say, this is a great conversation. This is the primary conversation that we need to be having in these years. There is so much energy in the system right now. There's so much political energy. There's so much financial imbalance. There's a global the global weather imbalance. What I told your producer was, you take all the things we've been talking about, you add global warming to it, you raise the sea level 1 foot, you displace tens of millions of people. They'll be looking for a place to live. They'll be looking for food. I mean, this is going to erupt in violence, and everybody's going to be caught off guard because this is just how things go. And the things that are holding us back are political. There's enough money in the system for everybody. There's a thing called a guaranteed minimum wage. I'm a truck driver. The technology is going to put me out of a job.
Jim, you're covering a lot of ground there. I want to hit that main point you brought up of climate change, Daryl. This could be a big driver of mega change outside of the weather and climate, can't it?
It is going to be a big driver. And in my closing chapter, I actually look at some of the things that are starting to unfold now that have the potential to be incredibly disruptive in the future, and climate change is one of those issues that I talk about. In addition to some countries turning to the right and undermining democracy, robots taking jobs, and so on. Like, these are the types of things where we're already starting to see the impact, but that impact is going to accelerate. So in the case of climate change, your caller is right that, you know, there are major cities all around the world that are located either on the ocean, on rivers, or on seas. And if the water just comes up a few feet, which is likely to be the case by 2100, there are going to be downtowns that are underwater. Power plants often are located right on these waterways because they need water to cool things, and so they chose that location. We may have to relocate or build dams around those utility plants. And so when you think about the impact on our economic base, when you think of the impact of climate change on agriculture, oftentimes when countries are under stress and there's a sharp conflict over resources, you do get war and violence that comes out of that because countries need to kind of grab territory in order to feed their people and strengthen their economies. So these are the types of transformations that already are looming. And, you know, we think we're living through a period of great change now. When you think about the next 50 years, there actually could be even more dramatic changes that take place.
Jim, thanks for the call. Time for one more caller, Sarah in Zion, Illinois. Sarah, hi.
Well, hello. And yeah, your producer wanted me to focus on the how technology as a whole has just overtaken our lives, and that doesn't totally surprise me. I mean, it's certainly true, and I don't like it in general, but I'm not against technology. But I have seen this enormous change in the public school system where I work down here in Zion, Illinois, and because I'm an assistant in the classroom, we have a new computer-based curriculum where the kids are hooked into these computers for 75% of their teaching day. And the teachers are now monitors during that time. They don't actually teach. They just let the computer do it. And I was not expecting that at all. And the classrooms are completely different, and I have seen the effect. We all have seen the effect on the kids. They've only been at this for 2 months, and the kids are behaving differently, and I think it is going to have a really bad effect on kids and people in general as they grow up.
Sarah, thanks for the call. Unintended consequences, Daryl, of technology and the way we learn and communicate.
Technology has the capacity to produce great benefits for humankind, but as the caller noted, it also has a capacity to destroy a lot of things. And the internet is one of the reasons why we're seeing this increase in extremism. You know, it used to be that neo-Nazi who lived in some small town might have difficulty finding a like-minded person who shared his or her point of view. Because of social media and digital communications, it's easy to find people who share your own extreme viewpoint. We also are seeing examples internationally where there always have been local grievances, but they often stayed in that locality. Today, because of global communications and technology, grievances 5,000 miles away become our grievance. We get upset about what is happening in Africa, in Asia, and in Latin America, and it kind of draws us into conflicts elsewhere. So we do have to be careful with technology. It's been very disruptive. It's changed virtually every sector. It has also globalized conflict, and it's encouraged extremism. So we need to figure out ways to get a handle on that.
A lot of food for thought. We'll leave it there for now. Daryl, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Daryl West, Vice President and Director of Governance Studies for the Brookings Institution. We've been talking about his new book, Mega Change: Economic Disruption, Political Upheaval, and Social Strife in the 21st Century.
I'm Kate Archer Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.